You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. And ladies and gentlemen, it's Media Day. If you're probably listening to this either while Media Day is going on or shortly after it concluded, and maybe have already started to enjoy a trickle of ridiculous quotes that always seem to come out of Media Day and somehow still inspire us as fans. You know, the stereotypical, or I should say prototypical, best shape of his life comments that we always seem to hear in every sport, really, spring training and baseball, training camp and football, and now Media Day and training camp and basketball. We'll surely hear some of that related to some of the players on the roster. But here's the thing. We enjoy that. It gets us ready for the season as fans. It keeps us going. And we're, I think, all at the stage where any news is, I shouldn't say any news is good news, because I guess last September was quite notable from a news perspective for Wolves fans, and not in a good way. So it's certainly going to be refreshing to have a media day without the Jimmy Butler saga hanging over it, without cranky Tom Thibodeau being cranky. So we'll have always positive Ryan Saunders, and unless you're the sort of person that gets nauseous from too much optimism and positivity, this should be fun. Should be a lot of fun. Over the course of the week, plan to highlight some of the over-the-top quotes that we'll undoubtedly see, whether it be from the Timberwolves themselves or other, you know, beat writers and everybody who's going to push that information out into the world. We'll discuss some of those, maybe come up with a ranking of the most ridiculous, positive quotes that come out of training camp. But undoubtedly, we'll still let these quotes, these opinions, shape the way that we look at this team as we get into the season. So all that to say, we'll have plenty of Media Day content for the podcast on Tuesday, kind of hit some of the highlights that we see. And if you are listening to this on Monday afternoon, Media Day festivities kicked off at 12:30 in the afternoon on Monday, and we're streamed live on Timberwolves.com. So all that content, if it's over, will be up on their website, surely, on Timberwolves.com, and we'll be covering the highlights again for the podcast on Tuesday here on Locked On Wolves. So for today's, for Monday's podcast, since Media Day hasn't actually happened yet, at the time of this recording, we're going to go over the ESPN Fan Misery Index, which was posted last week, and that is a look at all sports, the four major sports in the U.S., and not specific to basketball, but there is an overall ranking and an NBA ranking, so we'll look at where the Timberwolves fell there and whether or not I agree with the way that the rankings went down. So that'll be fun. And then a couple of bold predictions from yours truly on the season. I wrote a piece for Dunking with Wolves, the fan-sided blog that I am one of the co-editors for, and it was three bold predictions for the season. I'm going to highlight a couple, I guess kind of mesh two of them together and talk about a third. The one featuring potential player movement during the season and what I think will happen, which I touched on a little while ago, a few weeks ago on this podcast. But then the other featuring a specific player on the Wolves roster and my prediction for him for this season. So we're going to go ahead and get into it, the Fan Misery Index at ESPN.com. And this was posted, I think, in each of the different leagues on ESPN's website. So if you go to the NBA home site or the MLB home site, it was posted there. The overall article was called "When Fandom Goes Bad, Most Miserable Fan Bases in Pro Sports." And there's an overall ranking of the top of all 123 franchises in the NFL, MLB, NBA, and NHL. The top 25 each got their own little write-up about why they were ranked where they were. And by top 25, I mean the 25 most miserable fan bases. And then beyond that, basically, they just had the teams ranked and then their scores. The score, really briefly, not to get too in the weeds on the criteria, I think, you know, please go read the article anyways, but then once you do that, you can read through the criteria. But basically, they scored each team on championships, so how recently you've won a championship, playoff berths, how often and recently you made the playoffs, playoff wins, pretty self-explanatory, heartbreaks, which is a little bit more subjective, basically blowing big leads, losing game sevens, losing at the last second, and, you know, that's one of those categories which we'll see. The Timberwolves actually didn't have that bad of a score in heartbreaks because they haven't been close enough to have many true heartbreaks. So inherently, some of the better teams are going to have a worse score in heartbreaks. Rival comparison, and then a bonus for misery. Teams that have gone 25-plus years without winning a championship get a bonus for misery. And If you are a fan of Minnesota sports, that is all of your sports teams. My quick math tells me, yep, that's true. The Twins won in 91, so that was, what, 28 years ago? All Minnesota sports teams got that misery bonus, and the Timberwolves have existed now for 30 years and have not won a championship, have not even gotten to the finals. So they did quite well there, or I guess poorly there, depending on how you want to look at it. So to the rankings, the number one most miserable, before we get to the Timberwolves, I think it's notable, the number one overall most miserable fan base ranked was the Sacramento Kings, regardless of sport. And it wasn't all that close. They beat the San Diego Padres by about a point and a half, 28 and a half points to 27.2 points, I guess. And that's related to they haven't made the playoffs since 06, which is now currently the longest drought in the NBA. Haven't won a playoff series since 04, which is when they faced the Timberwolves in the Western Conference Finals and lost to the Wolves. That was the Rick Adelman coached. Well, I guess most of the best Kings teams were Rick Adelman coached. And then it's also referenced the controversial officiating in the Tim Donaghy scandal back in 02 when the Kings lost the big lead to the Lakers, then lost it overtime in Game 7 and lost the series. So that factors in a little bit of an outside factor there. So at any rate, the Kings are number one overall, number one in the NBA. Then the Padres, the Buffalo Bills, the NFL, Cleveland Browns, the NFL, Florida Panthers, the NHL, the Jets of the NFL, the Dolphins of the NFL. We don't get to another NBA team in the overall rankings until all the way down at number 12 overall, and that's the Phoenix Suns. So number 12 overall. So if we skip over to just the NBA rankings, you're looking at the Kings as the most miserable fan base, the Suns at number 2, the Knicks at number 3, and your Minnesota Timberwolves at number 4. Up 2 spots from number 6 last year, and the reasoning given here in the article is basically that the Wolves made the playoffs 2 years ago, missed it this last season, dropped them down a couple spots. They basically swapped with the Charlotte Hornets and the LA Clippers, who both slid down the rankings. The Hornets didn't really deserve to move down the rankings. The Clippers, I get it. I guess they made the playoffs, but the Hornets are going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. At any rate, the ranking, they're middle of the pack in terms of championships. It's just a huge tie with all the organizations that haven't won championships, which is plenty of them in the NBA. So they got 14 points there. And this was a situation where the most points, or you don't want more points. Basically, the more points you get, it's like golf, essentially. The most points you get, the worse ranking you actually have. Playoff berths, they were the second worst. Playoff wins, the worst. Heartbreaks, the opposite end of the spectrum because they haven't really had any. Rival comparison, number 7. So it's hard to argue too much with this, although, I mean, having them behind the Knicks is a little weird. I think the Knicks, maybe the misery is a little more, it's certainly more prominent because of being in New York and the whole, the NBA is better off if the Knicks are a decent team type of a thing. But interesting that they would have moved up ahead of the Timberwolves, especially given recent history. I mean, the Knicks were at least competitive in the 90s and have made the playoffs far more frequently than the Timberwolves. The Suns at number 2, I can buy that, although they had much better years in the 7 seconds or less Suns and the D'Antoni years than the Timberwolves have actually really had. Even the Kevin Garnett years, they never got out of the first round until his last year making the playoffs with the Wolves. So, and the Kings at number 1, it's really hard to argue with that. But it's clear that the Timberwolves are a top 5 most miserable fan base in the NBA. And as Wolves fans, do you agree or disagree with that? I think it's hard to argue against it. And here's hoping that changes here in short order with the new regime led by Gerson Rosas. So head over to ESPN, read that article. I tend to agree with the ranking, although I'd probably swap them with the Knicks and maybe say number 3 behind the Kings and the Suns. But a good article overall, interesting read. So we're going to go ahead and get into some predictions about the Timberwolves roster this year. But first, Manscaped is number 1 in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, let's get into a couple of bold predictions for the season for the Timberwolves. The first one is something we've talked about a little bit here at Locked On Wolves over the past few weeks and centers on the potential for some player movement for the Wolves. We've talked at length about Gerson Rosas and the front office's activity over the offseason. Much of the roster has turned over, and while there isn't anybody resembling a second star, the team's second best player is Robert Covington, who, of course, was on the team for the better part of last season, although he only played in 20 or so games. And actually, the third best player is probably still Jeff Teague, who was already on the roster previously. The roster depth is far superior to what it has been in recent years, in my opinion, and we'll learn more clearly as the season gets going. But between the number six overall pick and Jarrett Culver, Josh Okogie coming on strong as a rookie, and then adding some solid NBA players and Noah Vonleh, Jordan Bell, a guy who just kind of started to break out into his own as a role player last year, Jake Layman, Shabazz Napier, who's a strong backup point guard. The team has some depth. And so while it hasn't been an active offseason in terms of succeeding for finding big name players, it's been active in that the Timberwolves have found some depth and have not, essentially, I think the best way to put this is after Rosas missed out on D'Angelo Russell and he ended up going to Golden State in the sign and trade, and the Wolves actually picked up the pieces and ended up with Napier and Trevion Graham as part of that larger movement around the league. The Wolves, instead of changing course and wasting a bunch of cap space on acquiring a quote-unquote second star or a guy who might, at that point, have probably been overpaid, the Timberwolves turned around and used their cap space on short-term contracts, low-risk, essentially no-risk deals, nothing longer than a couple of years. I mean, they got Noah Vonleh and Jordan Bell at essentially league minimums. Jake Layman is, I think, 3 years, but at minimum, not actual minimum, but low money. There wasn't a huge risk there for some positive depth and a guy that can play multiple positions. The Timberwolves were very smart in how they used that cap space. They're all tradable contracts. They're all guys who are going to be valuable if they stay on the team and the contracts that they're signed to currently. And the Timberwolves will have the ability to extend anybody that they want to following the season if they so choose to do that. But the Wolves maintain their flexibility, and while they've got a bunch of ugly deals on the books, Gorgie Jang's got 2 years left, Jeff Teague's expiring this year at $19 million, and obviously Andrew Wiggins has several years left at a crazy number on his max deal, the Wolves still have a relative amount of flexibility compared to some other teams and also compared to where they could have been had Rosas panicked and spent his cap space on overpaying somebody. So all that to say, what sort of move could the Wolves make in season that's significant? We've talked a little bit about some potential trade targets. The bold prediction here boils down to, I believe that the Timberwolves will trade Andrew Wiggins at the February trade deadline. I don't think he'll get traded before then. I don't think it'll be a December 15th trade when suddenly, when teams are able to move guys they signed in free agency. So Russell's actually able to be traded on December 15th. And I'm not saying that it'll be Wiggins for Russell, because it won't be. But I don't think the Wolves will move him until February. I think they're going to try and get him to fit into the new system and to improve his shot selection and just be a more attractive trade piece. If it helps the Wolves win games, that's a bonus. And then if he increases his trade value, that's even better. And the Wolves would then be able to turn around and move him in February. If they really could have moved him last February or this past offseason for positive value, then that tells me that the Wolves will be doing everything they can to continue to increase his value and actually win a trade when they would trade out Andrew Wiggins potentially in February. And I don't know that there's any scenario short of him suddenly morphing into a legit all-star and everything clicking at once. I don't think there's any way that Wiggins is on this team opening day next year in fall of 2020. And my prediction is that he's moved at the deadline in February, like the week of the deadline. I think that there will be more than one team that would be willing to take him on, that the Wolves will increase his value significantly. And I do think Wiggins will have a solid year. But the point here is that unless he, like I said, everything clicks, he's not going to be worth the contract that he signed. He just won't be. So the prediction is that he will get traded. And then the second piece of that is, and I don't know that it will be the same deal, it could be a three-team deal. I'd be surprised if it were the same deal. The Wolves will land a second All-Star this year. That may not be at the February trade deadline. I think it would be even bolder if I said that they would. But I think between the trade deadline and next summer, the Wolves will acquire another All-Star, whether it's D'Angelo Russell or somebody who's maybe a little bit less exciting that doesn't fit the window immediately. That's possible. Or, and this isn't a second all-star necessarily, but a guy who's trending in that direction in Devin Booker. That could be a trade of bad contracts with Wiggins and Booker, essentially. Bradley Beal's out there. You know, maybe they end up in a swap where they end up having to take back John Wall with Bradley Beal and they send out Jeff Teague and everything to match salaries. That would be interesting. Doesn't seem like something that Rosas would be excited to do unless they get positive reports on Wall's health and they are really high in Bradley Beal. But I believe that Wiggins will be gone and that a new player, a new all-star, borderline all-star will be in around the trade deadline is the prediction here. Just based on what we know about Rosas and the way that he wants to approach being aggressive and finding a second star to match with Karl-Anthony Towns. And he's saying all the right things in public regarding Wiggins, but it's pretty clear that his Wiggins contract and what he's done so far at the NBA level are not something that Rosas is going to be super excited about. So he's going to give him a chance to turn around a little bit, but I think it's more along the lines of improving his trade value than it is about actually considering keeping Wiggins at his max contract here moving forward into the future. Last bold prediction for the season is directly related to Karl-Anthony Towns and his what I think will be a really great season for him for the Timberwolves. My bold prediction is that he will be second team All-NBA. Remember, he made the third team 2 years ago following the 17-18 season when the Wolves made the playoffs. And then last year, just missed the third team, was beat out by Rudy Gobert, among others. Prediction here is he'll make the second team All-NBA. And as part of him making that team, he will also have a 50-40-90 season. If you're not familiar with that, 50% or better on field goal attempts, 40% or better on threes, 90% or better at the free throw line. A little bit of a leap there, which is why I guess it's a bold prediction. I guess first let's talk about the 50-40-90. So Towns has always shot above 50% from the field. He was 54% in change each of his first three seasons, dipped to just under 52% last year. He's been over 40% on threes the last two seasons. He was at 42.1 2 years ago and 40% last year. So those two, I shouldn't say they're a given because shooting over 40% from three isn't, especially if he starts shooting more threes, which I think he will, and he has progressively throughout his career. He shot more each year. But under the new system and the emphasis the Wolves are playing on shot values from around the court, I think it's a guarantee, essentially, that Towns will shoot more threes. So the question mark becomes free throw shooting. 2 years ago, he shot 85.8% from free throws, on free throws. Last year, he shot 83.6%. So about a 2% dip there. But if you look at his best number from a couple years ago, you know, Towns was only, 4.2% away from reaching that 90% mark. I got to believe that's something that, you know, Towns would never admit to wanting to do, but he's a smart guy. He knows that he could make history. He'd be the ninth guy in history to reach the 50-40-90 club. And you can bet that that's something that he would really like to do. He would be only the second big man, and I guess the first center to reach that number. Dirk Nowitzki is the only other player who's a big man who has reached that mark. And the other players are Larry Bird, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Reggie Miller, Steve Nash, Mark Price, and Malcolm Brogdon. So Towns would be the ninth player to reach 50-40-90. And really all he's got to do is keep doing what he's doing from the field and just improve that free throw shooting percentage. And I believe that that's something that Towns can put his mind to and succeed. I mean, he's obviously an incredible shooter. And if he has a 50-40-90 season and the Timberwolves win, you know, 40 games or more, they're roughly a 500 team, they're in the playoff hunt. I think even if they don't make the playoffs, he makes an All-NBA team. They might have to actually get a playoff spot for him to get up to second team. I think there's enough of that perception that you can't be an All-NBA player if you can't bring your team to the playoffs, which, sure, there's some truth to that, but I think it's overblown. But the prediction here is that he makes second team All-NBA for the first time in his career and that he gets the Wolves on the cusp of the playoffs. The Wolves are clearly going to feature him a lot more on the offense. There was another Ryan Saunders interview. I think it was with maybe the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Star Tribune. I think it was Chris Hine at the Star Tribune, where Saunders came out and said that they want to get Towns the ball in more spots and not just on the low block, but also outside the 3-point line, initiating the offense, handling the ball more. And in the event that they're able to do that, Towns is going to he should get more efficient looks at the rim. He should be able to pass the ball and then cut to the rim. He should be handling the ball more on the open floor, bringing the ball up after getting a rebound. In the past, we've seen him be really good when he does that and then jets to the rim and scores in transition. But sometimes he gets a little fancy and he makes turnovers, you know, trying to make the fancy pass in the open floor. So if that's something they continue to work with him on, he's going to get more, you know, Towns in transition is going to get high percentage shots and he's going to get fouled more, go to the free throw line. He's going to make higher percentage shots at the rim if he's getting out in transition. He's going to potentially get himself open more if he's passing and cutting versus just waiting on the block for a double team, which of course puts him in generally an inefficient position being double teamed on the block. So look for him to challenge that 50-40-90 mark this year. And of course he was 50-40-85 2 years ago. So I think that's almost a for sure thing. I think he can manage to bump that free throw percentage back up to 85%+ and then challenge 50-40-90 as well as second team All-NBA. So look for that to happen this year. That's all we have for today's show. Thank you for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. And happy Media Day, everybody. We will be back on Tuesday with a synopsis of Media Day, some of the high points. And then throughout the week, we'll talk training camp as the Wolves will be in Mankato for the middle part of the week before heading back to Mayo Clinic Square and then hitting the road for the first preseason game a week from Tuesday. That'll be Tuesday, October 8th in Phoenix, Arizona. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.